J'ai tout remis en question, ce que j'ai pu apprendre à l'école.
Se dire, comment je fais avec les pucerons?
As you become the seeds of change in any place in the food web.
En m'intéressant non pas à ma plante dans mon champ, mais en m'intéressant à mon champ dans un environnement que je contribue à fabriquer en quelque sorte.
Proven local practices combined with scientific knowledge provide the best guidance.
Ça n'a rien à voir avec ce qu'on a pu apprendre dans les lycées agricoles classiques.
Donc l'agroécologie, ben, c'est, on allait dire, ça fait partie des savoirs traditionnels de n'importe quel paysan ou paysanne du monde entier.
Le meilleur concepteur d'outils, c'est le paysan.
C'est un très fort niveau de technicité, l'agriculture économe, autonome et la vraie agroécologie.
Et puis de pouvoir comme ça durer pendant des années sans abîmer mon sol, sans abîmer le petit morceau de planète qui m'a été confié.
It's not going to be, not only going to be individual actions that's going to make a change.
Que veut dire l'intelligence? L'intelligence, c'est pas forcément sortir le premier de Polytechnique, je veux dire.
We need to all get behind associations, movements that are going to change the system.
It's not only techniques, but it's also a tool to change our society.
Welcome back to our podcast series about knowledge transfer in agroecology, hosted by six organizations from different European countries, all working under the Erasmus Plus project, Bridging Generations in Agroecology. Last episode, we heard about the challenges and barriers that civil society and indigenous peoples face in global governance spaces, and we ended with a powerful call from Sofia Monsalve to reinvent democracy, reinvent human rights, and reinvent the UN system for peoples and people's sovereignty. So with that in mind, this episode, I'm extremely excited to immerse you in two different stories about peasants' rights so we can begin to imagine how we need to reinvent human rights in the UN system as well as on the local level. Today, we will hear from Nasik, a fisherman from South Africa, and Ramona Dumunichoiu, a peasant farmer from Romania. Nasik will talk about knowledge in its many forms, especially the knowledge required to engage with the social and political spheres of governance. But above all, he will tell a story that is deeply rooted in the struggles of fisher folk in South Africa. Let's listen closely to how Nasik's story is related to fisher folk's rights and peasants' rights, and a battle for whose knowledge and whose ways of being are considered legitimate and whose are not.
When we speak about agroecology and the transference of knowledge and information and understanding, it is on the one hand good to speak about the technical knowledge and the practical knowledge that we have to have in order to apply the skills that is needed to produce or to take forward our livelihoods. We need to know how to tie a knot in a particular way to catch that fish. So you've got to use this hook and you've got to tie that knot only in that way. But you've got to learn how to do it. But for fishers, we've got to learn how to do many different types of knots. So we are master knot makers. But that is a practical knowledge. That is knowledge that we learn on the job while doing. But what we also need to learn is the social and political dimension that we live in. Quite often, in fact, very often, we are being told you do not want to modernize. You want to live in the space where you do things by hand, where you do things whilst you are dirty, you do things in an old archaic manner, that there's modern ways with machines that you can do things. And when we try and explain, but we have knowledge, we have skill, we have an understanding, and we know how to catch particular species of fish because we know the direction of the wind, we know the season we are in, we know the habitat that that particular species live in, the scientist tells us these are but stories. They're little stories that your grandparents have told you. It's not based on science. It's not based on fact. So what we do is that we say that the knowledge of the skill, of the hard skills that we have to do the work, and the knowledge of ourselves and our people can be taught on that little boat out there. So when you're out in the waters in the deep, and there are only five of you on that boat, you share with each other, you interact with each other, that boat becomes a school. It becomes a location where education and training happens. The same for when we happen to fish in an area that government and scientists has decided to call a marine protected area. Now they declare these things for the protection of their children to come and look at the fish in the future. Not for us. That's because we're not allowed to fish there. Their children must come next year and the year thereafter to look at it. And then we have nothing. So those marine protected areas are declared. And then the police come and they arrest us on the water. The entire boat is taken. All of us that was on the boat is taken. Whatever fish we had caught is taken by the police. And we get put in prison for a day, sometimes a month. That prison becomes a school. Wherever we are, we interact and we teach and we share with each other. So some of us are very lucky that we have physical buildings and spaces where you can apply dedicated classes or dedicated training. But in many of our situations, we do not have that. So wherever we find ourselves, wherever we are busy doing what we are doing, engaging in our livelihoods, those spaces becomes spaces where training and knowledge transference also happens. Now that, for me, brings an important point, because what is now happening is the areas or the territories or the water bodies where we've lived off for generations, those spaces are becoming under threat. And the threat comes from transnational corporations, international companies. The threat comes from legislations that governments are passing to dispossess us from those territories. The threat comes from conservationists. As good as they may sound, many conservationists say, we are protecting the nature, we are protecting the species. What they are actually doing is dispossessing us from our livelihoods. They are dispossessing us from access to where we are working. Yet we are the ones who work in a manner that sustains nature. For us, we fish, we have a long line, we put a hook at the bottom, we throw it over, and we catch one fish. And we bring it up. Industry comes with a massive boat, with huge amounts of spaces for nets. And they go and they just drag it around the ocean. And they destroy everything. And they can bring up, in one day, they can bring up to 10 tons of fish. Whereas for us, when we go out, we would have caught one fish every 10 minutes or one fish every hour. We come home with only enough to eat and only enough to share or only enough to sell. So we are actually more sensitive to the environment than what anyone else is. So when we transfer, when we learn those things and we share that, we must know that we are actually conservationist par excellence. So we should be protected more than what industry should be given subsidies and so on. So what it means is that our struggle is not just the struggle to gain access to the sea, to catch fish, or in many of your cases, have access to land in order to grow. Our struggle is also about maintaining that access. Our struggle is about fighting back against neoliberalism, fighting back against what we in South Africa call corporate capture. You know, this whole notion of capture where industry and the rich take the spaces that used to belong to us. That they have now captured. It is not us. So that is a struggle that we have to fight. And to fight that struggle requires skills. It requires analysis. It requires understanding. It requires knowing how to run an organization. And in our case, because the way we work, respect for human dignity, respect for everybody's right to take part, and respect for those rights that has been removed, that has been taken away, or that has been denied. So all of those principles need to be taught and acquired as well. But again, these are skills that we're saying we learn as part of the trade. And our trade to push back corporate capital, to push back the desire for profit and richness becomes political mobilization and political organization. We ought not to or do not rely on government to provide us with schools or moments of training, because they are not going to give us the skills to fight against them. So we have to do it ourselves, but we have to understand that this is a different kind of space that we live in. That we live in a neoliberal world where we're being pushed all the time, and we have to push it back. So we have to acquire the skills to push it back, and we must know that we're going to make gains. We're going to gain back maybe 300 kilometers, but then these neoliberals will come at us again, and they're going to push us, take away from what we felt that we had gained. We will just have to learn the kind of resilience, the kind of understanding that we also have to continue to push back the pushback. So there's a constant fight and battle for space that we have to engage in, and that in itself is a knowledge system that has to be coupled with making a living, protecting human dignity, and protecting the environment. And more importantly, recognizing that it is the human right of all of our communities to be able to engage in that kind of activity. So these are important lessons that we learn through struggle. So fishing is one thing, and we do that. But the right to fish has often been taken away from us. Then we have to struggle to fight it back. So to be able to make our livelihoods and to protect human dignity, we engage in the struggle all the time. So these lessons are lessons that we continue to learn, and that we have to continue to be open for. So wherever we are, at whatever moment we're in whichever space, these are spaces, as much as we are under pressure, these are spaces that we have to use. Thank you.
That was Nasig with such a compelling story about the resilience of fisher folk communities in South Africa, and ending his talk there with a reminder that we need to keep using political spaces despite all the pressure we are under. This brings us nicely to our next speaker, Ramona, a farmer from Transylvania and Romania, a coordinator of Ecoruralis, Europe's largest association of peasant farmers, and also she is heavily involved in the coordination of La Via Campesina. Somehow, she manages to do it all. Ramona will talk about the UN Declaration on the Rights of Peasants, otherwise known as UNDROP, a struggle which embodies Nasig's story on a global level. Let's jump straight into it.
With regards to UNDROP, as you all know, this is an instrument that we've been using as a guidance, as a guide, ever since this instrument was negotiated in the Human Rights Council and in the General Assembly. So there's been quite a few years. This is a human rights protection instrument that defines the human rights of the most vulnerable people that are involved in food production, in the food distribution, and in consumption. And our strategy has always been that we need to shift public policies on food and agriculture from the direction that is currently developed, that is currently going on to excessively support the economic objectives of food and agriculture agribusiness sector towards a direction that supports and recognizes human rights, that can elevate also the role of the people who produce food, focused, of course, on the reduction of poverty and resilience in facing the crisis and the conflicts, especially those from our region. For sure, there is no question that in our region, we have been hit really hard by a series of crises that have a historic background on one hand, like we have, for example, in the situation of the war in Ukraine, various conflicts and social unrests that are happening even now in the region. The food crisis that also has a historic background, the economic crisis, the political and democracy crisis, but also we have been hit with new problems like the COVID health crisis, which aggravated all of these historic problems. So all of these have been directly affecting us as people from the ground, as our organizations, and did not allow us to advance as fast or as efficient as we needed with work. This is the case. I'm speaking mostly from a personal point of view, but I know I'm aware of many of you being slowed down by the problems around us. The work on UNDROP is really complex, and until now we have included it in our work on developing agroecology, because it goes hand in hand with the sustainability of this model of production. Model of production that can only be achieved by us, by the small scale peasant family farmers, fisher folks, pastoralists, and so on. We included in the past, in the previous activities, discussions and presentations on UNDROP in the agroecology schools, especially this year. And for sure, we will continue to do so in the future activities. And as we're coming together as a united regional network for Eastern Europe and Central Asia, this is not just a discussion on a project, it's a discussion of a network that is in the process of being built. There are several plans of work that we will need to focus on progressively. The first and the most important one is the awareness raising of peasants, of ourselves, of civil society, peasant organizations particularly, and the large public, of course. Awareness raising on the content of UNDROP, promoting the key peasant rights that refer to natural resources, seeds, land, water, as well as the rights that are related to participation of peasants in decision-making processes. I have shared with you in the past several materials, a series of materials that have been created by various groups and experts in the past years, materials that explain the content of UNDROP, and more materials are in preparations, including materials that are part of ongoing projects. As you were able to see in the presentation of the BILIM platform, we have the possibility to have a special section dedicated to UNDROP, dedicated to peasant rights. We will be able to centralize over there tools and materials on our platform and continue to update it with new information as we advance with work. Hopefully, in time, we will be able to develop this section and contribute with examples from our countries, examples of best practices where we are able to enjoy peasant rights, but also cases of violation and degradation of our peasant rights. Because many times when we are exemplifying with case studies, it is the best way to build awareness raising. A second plan of work is capacity development for the peasants and small farmers organizations to promote and defend our rights. There are more opportunities for us, for sure, to develop our capacity at national and local level if we work as a network by sharing knowledge, how to organize on the ground, but also attracting together necessary resources. And finally, a very important plan of work is engaging in dialogue with authorities for the purpose of building stable processes, consistent processes of participation in decision-making between governments and small-scale farmers organizations. many of us, and of course, I'm not exclusively referring to small-scale farmers organizations, because among us, there are also environmental groups or groups of young people who are promoting agroecology in many ways. So there is a variety of groups of interest that are engaged in this dialogue and need to continue to be engaged. Many of us were already doing this work at national level, so there is a level of experience that we need to build on, we need to share it more, and we need to include more elements of UNDROP in it. And I want to share also with you some new developments. The first two refer to international dynamics. The first one is about Via Campesina, who is working together with international partners on developing also a website dedicated to UNDROP. This website is a work that has been very slowly advancing since 2019. So there is already more than 3 years since this website is in the making. It's going to be a website that will centralize information in English, Spanish, and French. So there will be no I don't see an overlap between this website and our own platform, Bilin. Because the Via Campesina website will be addressed to an international audience, whilst ours is addressed to a regional audience especially. And we should find the best way to make the links between this website and Bilim. The second news I want to bring to you is the fact that in the spring session of the Human Rights Council in March 2023, there will be a new resolution on the creation of a special procedure, which is going to be a working group on UNDROP, will be proposed for vote of the member states of the Human Rights Council. This working group will have the mandate to monitor the implementation of UNDROP at national, at the global level. And this working group will be able to report to the Human Rights Council on what are the stages of implementation of UNDROP. Our government will need to be lobbied at national level to support the creation of this working group. There is also a draft lobby letter that has been circulated very recently in English, French, and Spanish. And if you find it useful or interested, you can translate it into national languages and address it to your governments. The member states of the Human Rights Council are a limited number of countries. So we should look at Asia, because over there we have the member states from Central Asia and Eastern Europe. We have a Eastern Europe dedicated group of countries, and see exactly what are the members that we will need to lobby. We need to pay attention because the membership of the council is changing in January 2023. However, for the purpose of enhancing dialogue with governments, we can all send this lobby letter. And finally, I want to talk to you about this UNDROP project that we have with FAO-REU. We have an ongoing regional project with FAO-REU for the promotion and implementation of the UN Decade on Family Farming and UNDROP. And I know that in Ukraine, there is a lot of work. We've been trying to use UNDROP at national level in the terrible context of the war, trying to get the dialogue between the government, the presidency, and the small-scale farmers going, and make sure they are not being ignored by the current policies and the current plans of development and reconstructions that are happening in Ukraine. And Ukraine for us, it's as a region, is really important, particularly from the perspective of human rights and peasant rights, because we've been talking more and more about a food crisis. And the food crisis is not just something it's experts that need to talk about it. It's also us, the people. We need to popularize more and to get more engaged in these discussions, and to be relevant and, you know, to be related with what is happening around us.
Thank you, Ramona, for outlining the work streams underway to protect peasants' rights and the many ways in which those who are engaged keep spreading the knowledge on UNDROP. I also wanted to add that the online platform Ramona mentioned, Bilim, is a peasant-centered platform focused on knowledge sharing in the Central Asian region. Please search it up if you're interested to find out more. I want to thank both Nasik and Ramona for their insightful talks and contributions. They have only given us but a taste of the struggle for peasants' and fisher folks' rights. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I have and can use it as a starting point from which you can engage and support peasants' and fisher folk rights struggles wherever you are. Please join us next time for our episode on Indigenous, peasant, and fisher folk knowledge. Goodbye.